Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the community.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, all.
Get up, stand up.
Good morning. This is Rochelle Dixon. I am hosting Voices from the Edge, filling in for Joanne Hardesty this morning. Thank you so much for joining me. And I want to give you this number because it's very important today that you call. It's very important because I'd like you to be the guest today. I'd like to hear your thoughts on a few things that have happened during the month of June. So take this number down, write it down, and give us a call with your questions or your thoughts, your feedback. So the number is 503-231-8187. Again, it's 503-231-8187. And what I want to talk about is just the month of June in Portland. Man, it has just been a whirlwind month. I think all of us have felt that energy. Some of it's been very positive. Some of it's been very negative, unfortunately. And I just wanted to chat with you one-on-one about some of the things that have been going on. See if you have the kind of feedback that maybe helps me understand it more, and maybe I can help you understand it more. So let's dive right into it. And again, if you want to call, the number is 503-231-8187. I'll be taking your questions. I'll be taking your feedback. So we're going to dive into this month of June in Portland. So we started off pretty good. We got some good weather, and we got the Rose Festival going, and we had Robin Marks, who was the first African-American who was Rose Festival Queen, and she led the parade, and all of that was wonderful. And then it went downhill from there. That was the highlight of our month, I think. A lot of people might say that Pride might have been the highlight for their month, and I'm going to push back on that. That's one of the first things I want to start with. So the first thing that I want to chat with you about is, what is up with Portland being a progressive city, and we're still surrounded by so much inequality and racism? And it showed up in just about everything, every event that ever happened this month. So after the Rose Festival Parade, of course, we had something called Juneteenth. So Clara People started Juneteenth back in the 90s in Portland. But for the very first time, it was welcome out in East County, where a lot of African Americans and Latinas have moved due to gentrification out of Portland. So that was a good thing, June 19th date. But right along with that, we had situations like Tito Gully. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. So, do you know about Tito Gully? Is it something that you heard about? Because strangely enough, with all these pride celebrations going on, I thought I would have heard more about Tito Gully. Tito Gully was a queer person that was found hanging from a tree in Portland, Oregon. And I'm sorry, if you've got little ones around, you might want to turn this radio down today, or, you know, because we're just going to get into it here. So I didn't hear very much about that. I saw a lot of rainbow capitalism. I said it, I know. Rainbow capitalism. Pride, I believe it began as a protest, and some folks still say it is a protest. And a lot of folks use it just as a way of celebrating the fact that they have the right to exist. And so I get the celebration part, I get the celebratory part of it, but I want to say that Pride looked like a white nationalist march. The only thing that was missing was the tiki torches. Am I wrong? Tell me if I'm wrong, because maybe it's just me. So it looks like we have a caller on the line. It looks like it's Edie from Portland. So Edie, you're on the line with me. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much. And thank you again for saying his name. It needs to be heard and acted upon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can.
So I'm thinking of Portland, looking at some broader trends as well as inspiration and impetus for us to move forward. I love the Vanport Mosaic work. We've had folks saying how Native American, Indigenous peoples have been moved about, misplaced, abused, enslaved, etc., and how they were moved from North Portland, then Chinese came in and their homes were burned down, their farms were burned down, African Americans were moved in, they were moved out, then moved to Vanport for the World War II to be able to steal resources and labor from other people, and then the flooding, just as we've had with Katrina, that was long warned about, and the redlining, and then the gentrification as folks are moved out. The same process of economic oppression is going on, the same process of damaging the earth and what we need to take care of ourselves and each other has been going on with an urgency, as we've had the Superfund site of all these toxins, not only from the war industry and the chemical ag industry, but over and over, now they're dredging it up to make it worse. So this land from which everyone was moved, and then later for the World Fair Symposium, and then for the petroleum industry, where they can totally destroy one of those storage tanks by Zenith Oil Bomb Terminal.
Wow.
It has more than 100 times the TNT of the Hiroshima bomb. So we had the wonderful thing of people coming together saying, not again, the Japanese internment as well as the Mexican internment. We've had people come together,
Edie,
at ICE.
I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate all your thoughts.
Come this Saturday, the 29th, to Chapman and Longsville Park to resist fascists.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much for calling, Edie. Now, it looks like we have Ruth on the line from Beaverton. Ruth, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Okay, got some feedback? Am I just way off, or what? Did you see the rainbow capitalism? Did you see people left out of that process of either protesting or celebrating? Did you see the police infringing on people's right to be there? People felt really uncomfortable. They didn't come. What did you see? What do you want to say to me?
Yes, 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 to all of that. But my comment is not on that population, because, you know, I'm reminded Dr. King said, when we take freedom away from anybody, we take it away from everyone. I'm paraphrasing. Those aren't his exact words, but the concept we live with every day, all of us, no matter what age we are. And I'm a retired teacher, and we need to support our youth, whatever their gender identity is. In the bigger picture, freedom is about being responsible. Whom do I address at KBOO, which I love, in taking off the zoo concert ad, because that is so abrasive to those animals that have to listen. I know in terms of what your agenda is today. That seems frivolous. But in the bigger picture, I'm just reminded of Martin Luther King's challenge to us. So, thank you for this show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So if you want to call back, if you've got some questions or thoughts about KBOO in general, you'd want to speak with the station manager. And the station manager's name is Rachel. Not me. I'm Rochelle.
Okay.
So it's Rachel.
So,
I'm going to take another call. And thank you so much for your comments. I do appreciate them. So it looks like it's Carolyn from Hillsboro. Carolyn, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hello. Good morning, Carolyn. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
I was shocked to hear of what I'll name and name with clarity, the lynching of that person. And my question is when was it done and where? Then who has been ID'd as the culprit to do that, did that? And I'll take I don't need to hear it on air. I'll just sign off and let you answer those questions.
Okay, yeah, thank you for asking that question. So the answer is no one has been declared responsible for what a lot of people believe was a suspicious death and a murder. So Tito Gully was found hung from a tree, and police initially declared that it was a suicide and denied the family the opportunity to have an autopsy, and held on to the body for just about a couple weeks. So it's been a very difficult time for them. And what's interesting is Pride is going on, and the police are in Pride, but yet you have this queer person hung from a tree. Now, when I think about climbing a tree, I did that back when I was a child. And I'm sure some of us are a little bit more agile than others. But you have to climb the tree and then find a sturdy enough branch to hang off of. And if you can just picture those steps in your mind, I know it's a horrible picture, then you see how very difficult it is to do this. And I believe one of the reasons why the parents were denied justice initially was because of racism, perhaps maybe homophobia or transphobia. I can't say that for sure. I don't know the people who were involved specifically in this investigation. What I do know is Portland. What I do know is repeatedly we've seen people of color overlooked in every kind of situation. This was supposed to be Pride Month, but yet a queer person is swinging from the tree, and I hardly hear anything about it. So there's an investigation going on right now because a lot of people called in and made complaints about it. So I'm hoping that there'll be some better answers. I think the autopsy said the death was from asphyxiation, which of course is, you know, lack of air from your airway being constricted. But it doesn't tell you who did it or how it happened. There's lots of different ways that can happen. So what do we think about the police denying the parents initially the opportunity to have an autopsy and holding on to the body for 2 weeks? What do we think about Pride and the rainbow capitalism that didn't speak to these events? It's happening more and more. Folks are having to take up kickboxing classes. So I have another call on the line. It's Suzanne from Salem. So Suzanne, you're on the line with me. What are your thoughts?
Thought means nothing to me. My left brain took a permanent trip when I was born.
Okay.
So I just rode down from Seattle through Portland to my city yesterday, and very openly, I was on a train full of zombies. People had their gadgets out, right? All that stuff. The electronic stuff that doesn't hug you. And therefore, eye contact was completely out. And so my seat happened to be at the tail end, sort of a half-sized car. We called ourselves the caboose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were all women in our part of the train, and a couple of people hadn't gotten, you know, their hamburgers or something. So the rest of us jumped up and went running around harassing the train staff, saying, we're getting grumpy here. We're going to have people starving. And we found out the truth, which was this particular run had new equipment and new staff. So once we found that out, the whole group of us, I'd say there were 15 of us, we became family. We were laughing. We helped, you know, somebody with a walker to get up and go to the potty, et cetera, et cetera.
That is a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate it. And folks, if you want to call in to KBOO, you're listening to Voices from the Edge, 503-231-8187. So today I'm talking about a lot of things that happened in the month of June. So we covered some of the good stuff. We had the Rose Festival Parade, the great weather. That was awesome. But then we had a spat, and we're still underway with June, of racist incidents that I don't see a lot of conversation about. And we know that Oregon has a racist history. We understand that. So I'm not going to go back and explain how some of this came to be, because I think most of us know that Oregon was formed as a white homeland. But I want to talk about how during the month of Pride do we have a black queer hanging from a tree, and this is not enraging anyone. Other things I want to talk about. So ICE. We're a sanctuary city. What does that mean to you? So to most folks, it means that we protect all of our citizens, including those folks that might be undocumented. But I want to tell you, that is not a good working definition. The definition of a sanctuary city is unfortunately not even that strong. So the definition is a city that has said it will not cooperate with the immigration enforcement. Now, that doesn't mean that immigration can't operate here. In fact, they do operate here. And I would not be surprised to see ICE arresting people and detaining people in the next few weeks. We've heard that Trump is going to arrest and detain, I think he said 11 million people. The good news is there's no capacity to do that, let's be honest. However, I believe that he will make good on his threat of detaining as many people as he can. Now, here's my pushback to what I just said. We're all up in arms over this, and it's a very good thing because we need to support our undocumented citizens. They're our neighbors. However, folks, you know how long this has been going on? Do you know how long this has been going on? I married an immigrant. Trump was not in office when I got married, and things were almost as bad. And apathy, and I'm going to say racism, got us here. We looked the other way for far too long, and now we're arguing over whether concentration camps is the appropriate name for places where they stuck children with no beds, inadequate food, inadequate supervision. I think we're up to maybe six or seven that have died. And the youngest child that was separated from their parents is 4 months. How can Oregon, and Portland specifically, call itself progressive with all these things that are going on and have been going on for the most part? Homophobia, racism, deportation of undocumented, and we look the other way. And now we say, well, Trump is doing all these things. I want to push back and say maybe that we've allowed some of these things. Now we're going to have to figure out what we do. So even no matter who's in that White House, what do we do as a state and as a city to take care of our citizens? Is racism a part of it? Maybe I'm wrong. Call me and tell me if I'm wrong. It's 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I'm not sure if it was blonde children and blue-eyed children, if this would be an issue, if we'd have to sneak children into centers in the Pacific Northwest in the middle of the night because they've been taken from their parents. I'm not sure if we wouldn't be outside those centers marching up and down the street until those children were free. But we're not doing any of that. Now, so we talked about Tito Gala, we talked about Pride. Was that rainbow capitalism? Is Pride still a protest? Is it more of a celebration for you? I do think that all points are valid there. I think definitely there is room for that celebratory part. People should be celebratory. But what about the protest part? Do you think that it was disenfranchising for the police to attend? Did that stop black and brown bodies from attending? Is pride becoming something that's classist and racist? What do you think? Give me a call. It's 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I mean, I could be completely off the mark. That's what it felt like to me. So I did my little cake protest where I helped folks out that were having celebrations, and they had rainbow cakes that they could have in their own spaces. But I noticed more and more black and brown people don't feel like going to Pride. So next, we're talking about ICE, right? And so we're in this grand city, and we know that we're a sanctuary city. And so some of us are going to try and support the people of color who are undocumented here. It tends to be a lot of Latinos, but let's not forget there's folks from all over the world that are facing these same hurdles. I just want to remind folks that when the deportation started, it started with Haitians. 60,000 Haitians were scheduled to be deported. And there was very little conversation around that at that time. 60,000 Haitians were scheduled to be deported. Most of them don't live in the Pacific Northwest. They live in places like Florida, Miami, but I didn't hear so much then. And if you look down the list of the top countries to have deportation schedules, most deportation schedules, you'll see that primarily they were Latin American countries. And Haiti being a country in Latin America. People forget that because it's a French-speaking country, but it is in Latin America. I wonder if we'd push back a little sooner if we wouldn't be dealing with children in concentration camps. Also, that word, concentration camps. How do you feel about that? Do you think we're operating concentration camps? What do you think they should be called? Are these just holding cells for children? Are children really being kept in cages? Do you think there's some grand conspiracy around this? Or do you think that the United States is honestly operating concentration camps for small children and asylum seekers? The number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Does anybody want to give me any feedback on that? Do you have any thoughts that differ from mine? I've heard that these concentration camps don't resemble the concentration camps of World War II. And I would say they didn't at the end. Yes, this the where we're at now does not resemble what Hitler had in place 10 years after we started, after he started. But just a reminder, the United States invented the concentration camps. Originally, Latin America used something called a reconcentration camp, but United States invented the rounding up of Native Americans and quarantining them in a particular area and all the horrendous genocides that happened to Natives and African Americans. So let's not pretend that Hitler created genocide. Let's not pretend that Hitler created all these things, and so therefore it's not in our DNA as a nation to do these things. I'm really disappointed to say it is in our DNA. And how do we stop it? How do we change this? We can't keep going this way. $757 a day for the Trump Hotel, $775 per child to be incarcerated in a concentration camp. Do you want to pay that bill? Is this a money grab? Is that what's going on? $775? Folks, even on my most expensive vacation, which my company paid for, I never paid $775 for a hotel room. Now, remember, they don't have soap. They don't have toothpaste. Call in at 503-231-8187 and let me know your thoughts on this. Is it a concentration camp? Is it not a concentration camp? I think it's fair to call it a concentration camp, but I've definitely heard some pushback on that. So I want to mention to you also up at 9 a.m., we're going to have Press Watch on. So this is Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news that you're not supposed to know. And at 10, it'll be the Heather McCoy Show. So lots of good reasons to stay tuned on KBOO. But right now, I want you to give me a call at 503-231-8187. So we're talking about ICE, and we know that we're a sanctuary city, and there are some protests going on, and I want to ask, is protest a form of support when you don't include the people that are being affected? So you're going to go downtown, and you're going to protest. This is happening right now. There are people who are planning protests, and I'm not so sure that it's going to have a negative impact by drawing more attention to undocumented citizens that are in our community. What do you think? Do you think going downtown, protesting and marching is the right thing to do? Should we write a letter to our citizen? How do we push back in an effective way and make sure that we're protecting our citizens, but our undocumented citizens, I should say, our undocumented community members, it's a better way of putting that, but without marginalizing them in the process? Are we putting them more at risk by calling attention through Patriot Prayer, the Proud Boys? I think the bill for policing these protests is about $80,000 to $120,000 a year. What could we do with $80,000 to $120,000 per protest, excuse me, per protest? Is that a good use of our policing funds? It hasn't turned out well in the past. Give me a call at 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Now, I know a lot of you folks like the anti-fascism movement, and I would like someone who maybe is part of that community or affiliated group, for lack of a better word, to give me a call and let me know how they've reached out to the communities that they're supposedly advocating for, to find out how their advocacy affects them. So if you're marching for yourself, that's one thing. You don't have to involve anyone else. You have every right to get out on the street and march for yourself. But if you're going to protest in the name of others, maybe you should consider the impact it will have on them. So the Proud Boys are wandering around downtown Portland. Does that make you feel safe? Doesn't make me feel safe. Give me a call at 503-231-8187 and let me know your thoughts. I've heard folks say, well, it works. We have to show up and let them know that we won't put up with it. Folks, you have to show up every day, 365 days a year, and let them know that you're not putting up with it. One day or two or three in the park blocks, to me, is not worthless, but not as effective if you showed up to keep marginalized people out of harm's way through legislation, through making sure that they have what they need. Now, when you go home from that march, who's left on the street? Oh, so we have the houseless, right? We have the houseless. Who's going to protect them when the march is over? You think it's going to be the police? A lot of the arrest of the houseless comes from individuals in our community calling the police. Do you think the houseless have a really great relationship with the police? Man, if I was houseless, I would really feel scared if I saw a police officer, because I don't feel like they're the best advocates for the houseless. Now, what about African Americans and Latinas? Let's just talk about folks that are citizens. Do you think they're wandering around town trying to have conversations with the anti-fascists, our Proud Boys? I think they're just staying away from downtown. I know I am. I know that my family is. I know that no one's ever asked me my opinion on what I thought about these movements. By the way, I've given it freely. The number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. So when you leave your march, what do you do to ensure that the people that you've impacted, and a lot of it will be negative, some of it might be positive, what do you do to make sure that that doesn't linger? So we have the Proud Boys coming over from Washington for a fight. Isn't that what they're coming for? Television, press? I think they're coming for a fight. The number's 503-231-8187. What would happen if we didn't give them the fight? You ever think about that? What would happen if no one showed up? If they were just downtown by themselves, wandering around? Do you think they'd come back every week? They come back for the press. They make these wonderful little videos that are, you know, 60 seconds of edited material, and they put it online, and that's how they recruit. No fight? I'm not sure that they're coming to Portland would be a good recruitment tool. But now it seems to be working very well. And I walk down the street, and in my neighborhood, there's swastikas on the sidewalk. And I haven't seen this since the 1980s, back when we had the skinheads. Yeah, it's back, folks. It's back. But at this point, I almost feel like it's worse. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like it's worse because I feel like in the 80s, there was an acknowledgement that this was a bad thing, that the skinheads were present. No one wanted to deal with them. They just wanted to get rid of them. But nowadays, I feel like there's a little bit of, I don't know how to say this, but there's some part of the movement, the leftist movement, that takes pleasure in engaging with patriot prayer in the streets. And I'm not sure if that's simply because they feel like that's the only place they can do it. That could be. And definitely, I'm not saying I don't want to push back. I want to push back every day, 365 days a year. I know that each of us don't have the capacity to do that, but I want to make sure that we're not leaving out the folks who are impacted when we do these things. Also, at 9 o'clock, Press Watch is coming up with Teresa Mitchell, and she's going to be taking a look at some of the news you're not supposed to know, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, is this topic just too heavy for you? Because my phone's not ringing right now. It's 503-231-8187. So Mariah from Hood River is on the line. It looks like my screen might not be working there, so sorry for keeping you on hold, Mariah.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been on here for a while, and my topic was talking about the children.
You go right ahead.
Okay. Well, one of the things that, you know, we're talking about the $775 a day, and this is basically a for-profit prison system. And if you, there's a place in Florida called Homestead, and they have a facility there where they're keeping 3,000 children. They're between the ages of 12 and 17. And actually, when these kids gets near their birthday, they put them in a special holding facility, because on their 18th birthday, they come in and shackle them and put them in handcuffs and move them to an adult prison. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I've heard about that, Mariah. Go ahead.
The concentration camps, it's the coolness, but the definition, a dictionary definition of concentration camps is civilian population being imprisoned without trial. Obviously, these are concentration camps. The other thing is that that 2,000, I just want to go over those numbers again, that $3,000 a day times 775 is $2.5 million for one night. If you multiply it out for a month, it's $22,000 per child. If you multiply it out by a year, it's almost $1 billion. That's for one facility. There's
so you think it's about money. You think it's about money. And
I think it's about greed. Yes, I do think it's about greed. We've got John Kelly, who was Trump's chief of staff. He's on the board of that for-profit facility. They just spent $38 million on two tent camps in Florida. $38 million. There's somebody making a lot of money.
You're going to have to email me this information, because how do you have all these numbers? Where did you get these numbers from? I'm nosy.
Because I follow the Homestead.
Homestead.
Let's see, the thing on Facebook about Homestead, and I can call you later with the exact.
Okay, I'd love to hear it. I've got to go take another call.
Lots of numbers.
Yeah, I'd love to hear this number. So I have I guess I lost that one. But I want to let you know that you can give me a call right now, because this line is open. It's 503-231-8187, and it looks like her numbers seem to be correct. If you do the math real quick, $775 a night and 3,000 kids, woo, that's a lot of money. So she says it's a money grab. Do you think it's a money grab? Is this all this about money? Is the root of it racism and money? That was always the root of slavery, right? So a lot of folks want to talk about slavery being about the melanin in a person's skin. You know, there's always differences in how people perceive people from other communities, but at the end of the day, slavery was about capitalism and money. It was about the color green, not necessarily about melanin. And now we have Jenna on the line. So Jenna, you're on the line.
Okay, so I wanted to make a comment earlier about something you were talking about earlier about people protesting, and is that doing something? I guess I have mixed feelings about that, but all I know is that I get really frustrated that so many people in Portland show up in the streets, and I feel like it's really performative, because all they want to do is be out there, and I feel like they just want to be seen with the sign. But then when they go home, they don't do the other work that you can do from home, you know what I mean? It's, okay, for example, on Saturday, I helped organize an action, and then people came up to me afterwards, and there was a few comments of like, well, what can I do now? And I was like, you know, call your congressman, and you need to put pressure on these people and donate money to this and to do that sort of thing. But they were the type of things that you don't do out in public. They're the sort of things you do when, you know, like you get home and you write the letters. And I just got these looks of like, well, that's not what we want to do. And they said, well, we want to be out on the street, and we want to stop this, the ICE bus, and that sort of thing. I was like, well, that's good, but you can't just be out in the street so that other people can see you protesting. You also need to do the other smaller work. And if you have privilege, you need to like give your money to help those who can be advocating for the people who are being oppressed. Anyhow, that's my little vent about I can't handle how people just show up in a performative way in this city, because it drives me nuts.
That's what's driving me nuts. Showing up one day of the year mm-hmm. in the street, and 365 days a year, people here are suffering. You have communities that are being left behind routinely, and all of a sudden you're up in arms one day a year or 2 days a year. I'm not saying let's turn the streets over to Proud Boys and to fascists. I don't want that. But if we show up 5 days a year, that's not going to get it done, folks. It isn't going to get it done, at least in my view. What is happening is they're using these tactics that have been employed by people marching in the streets and opposing them to recruit. You can go and look at their videos, and they edit them. They're not honest. They're not honest people. They edit these videos to look like they're doing the right thing. Now, I have Gail from Battleground, Washington on the line. Gail, what do you have to say?
Well, what I have to say is there's a lot of history around protest, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, and there's a lot of rhetoric that goes around. And what I know is that the government doesn't care how much we talk about this. The only time the government pays any attention is when people suit up and show up and cause social unrest.
Now,
and threaten the government. So, you know, That's really my message. There's a lot of things around what happens around immigration. And the truth is, immigrants have been immigrating since the beginning of time, and it's not going to stop. So no matter what we do, this force is much more powerful than the government. It's more powerful than anybody, any protest, any of it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep, I appreciate what you're saying, and I agree with you to a point that definitely showing up is a part of it. But if you think about the way people protested in the 1960s and the 1970s, it wasn't for the clashes. They sometimes did happen. Excuse me.
Yes, it was for the clashes. It was when
you know, I'm going to push back on that.
White kids were killed at Kent State.
I understand.
When the government really
on May 4th, I understand. And I also spent 5 days just this year with James Lawson, who was the architect of the civil rights movement along with Martin Luther King. He planned the sit-in protests with Memphis. I learned about the silent march, and I'd like to start using some of those techniques. But the one thing that he told me that they didn't allow people to do was cover their face, among other things like the anti-fascists do. And one of the reasons is most of those people were covering their faces back then were police informants. And so it was not good for the movement.
I marched myself. So I get, you know, you're talking, preaching to the choir, but there was a march on Washington that overshadowed any other civil rights demonstration, and it came to the front door of the White House. Okay, this is the kinds of things that the government perks up at. But also, in our history, there have been people who were targeted and assassinated for their speaking and their power.
Of course.
So you know,
I want people to march.
The rhetoric goes on, ma'am.
But I want them
to
show up every day of the year for people of color, for trans people.
Listen, if you took the energy that you're spending on this show and put it to actual action, the government would perk up.
You know what's interesting?
What you're saying I'm
an elected person, and I work on social justice 7 days a week. So
good,
I'll give you my bio another time, but I'm vice chair of Multnomah County Democrats, among other things. So it looks like we have Ann from Portland on the line. Ann, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Listen, I agree with you, and I disagree a little bit with the last caller.
I think I might have made her mad.
Well, she made me a little angry myself, and I'll tell you why. I moved to Portland 5 years ago, and I find more unconscious racism here than I've ever encountered. People are very much in denial. I'm white. I'm racist because I was born in America.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Here. Yeah, I breathed it in with the air. I have to work every day. And, you know, it's a constant struggle. Sorry, I'm panning a little bit because I was walking, so I'm going to stop. But what I wanted to say was I agree with you. Antifa should be following Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, to me, is a movement, very vibrant. It has legs. It's not going away. Antifa, there's a problem, as you said, because police informants and infiltration from the police and the FBI is ubiquitous. I was in a very small town in Northern California. I mean, it's only 100,000 people, and the groups that I was in were infiltrated.
And I appreciate you saying that, because there's a really interesting thing. When I was at the James Lawson Institute and we talked about why not cover your face, because we don't want people to be doxxed or outed. And he gave very good examples of where the situation was infiltrated. And because of that, lives were lost because people got inside information. He talked to folks and said, hey, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. They were police informants. There is a very nice picture of a person, a couple men that are supposedly anti-fascist, but their bottom of their shoe is turned up, and they're wearing shoes specially created for the police department. So they accidentally outed themselves in the picture. But thank you for calling in. We have another call, Rachel from Ashland. Thank you. Rachel, are you on the line?
Yes, hi, I'm on the line.
Hi, Rachel.
I'm going to address something you were bringing up about 10 minutes ago and about the movement of liberal white people and are protests becoming classist and racist? And I am a woman of color, descendant of slaves. In other words, I look African American. I'm treated like an African American in this country, so I know what I'm talking about. And I have wondered myself, like you have, about what happens if you just stop turning up at these things where you have the Proud Boys and all these racist people, and what if they don't have an audience? Because people turn up, they organize, they drive to these places, there's all these hours spent to come and, quote, confront these people, and then, like you say, they all go home, and then what? And I have done a lot of hours working in with community, organizing, working with groups that are in the Northwest here, predominantly white, so-called liberal, and so many of them are racist and they don't know it.
Yes, that's very true.
They go home to their big houses or their little houses, whatever they have, and then they have their little white little lives, and they don't fight this every day. It's like you say, you have to turn up every day, not just once a month when the Proud Boys come. And when you try to address this with them, you just get stony silence or you get tossed out of the group. I mean, I'm talking about all of them, DSA, 350,
Now, I believe 350 in Portland is now run by a biracial woman, so that might have changed. But
okay, that is good.
As you
that
see, I do
some insights.
Mm-hmm. I do speak my mind. I was a little worried about coming on this show today to say what I had to say, but I'm very, very frustrated. I think you've heard that. I'm very, very frustrated, and at the end of all of these problems, I see racism, I see classism, in every one of them. I don't care if you're talking houselessness, if you're talking the immigration problem, and it's like we won't deal with it. We won't deal with it, and so it keeps coming up. I married an immigrant. Trump's policies, except for the separation of children, is not much different than Clinton's policies.
And people think it's Trump, like you say. It's like, this didn't happen with him.
Yeah, he didn't invent it. I'd like to believe he did. I'd like to blame Trump. I would like to blame him. But my concern is, after he's gone, what do we do with people that have elected him? So thank you so much for calling in. I have another call on the phone. Martin from Portland. How are you today, Martin?
I'm fine. I just, you were kind of talking about demonstrations and how they weren't worth very much, but I have a different view on that.
Well, let's be accurate here. So I didn't say demonstrations. I do believe in demonstrations. I don't believe in anti-fascist clashing with Proud Boys. That's something totally different. You can demonstrate.
Okay. Well,
you can demonstrate without throwing
like
things.
I'd still like to say something about
demonstrations. Right ahead. Yeah.
When people go downtown or they go someplace and they demonstrate, and the news people come out with their cameras and newspapers write about this, a lot of the general public and the politicians realize there are people who are concerned about something.
Sure.
So it has an effect. It has an effect, and I think it's it may be more powerful than writing your senator, I think, or your congressman.
I'm not against demonstrations, so I appreciate your thoughts, but I just am concerned about people showing up, as one of the callers said, in a performative way, two or three times a year for that clash. There are people coming specifically to engage folks who really are beyond engaging in a civil way.
Well,
they come here for
another
the fight.
Another thing about that is that once violent language turns to violent actions, we start losing our democracy.
What do you think's happened now? I'm afraid to ask that question.
Well, that's what happened in Rome. That's what happened in Rome. Rome had a republic at one time, and violent words led to violent actions. And once people start dying, the democracy ends.
I just feel like there's the people who are privileged enough that they can show up two or three days of the year and go home and forget about it. And I know that we all don't have the capacity to work 7 days a week on social justice issue. What was interesting is the woman who called and said, if you'd spend as much energy on these other things, and I'm like, ma'am, I'm elected and I spend a lot of energy on these things. But I do also think, as you noted, to have a spotlight to talk about these things. This is a difficult conversation we're having, so I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. I have Linda from Portland on the line. Linda, this is Rochelle, Voices from the Edge. What do you want to say?
Good morning first, and thank you for the show very much. I wanted to stand up a little bit for the Antifa people fighting the others, and the reason is the last time, people always say, what would they do if nobody showed up? Well, what they do is attack other people. Every single time there hasn't been a counter demonstration, they find something regressive going on or that they think is wrong, and they attack them. And that is absolutely true. And on May Day, they went around following the May Day demonstrations, attempting to get fights. Antifa was there attempting to not have the fight start. And they went all the way around and then went to our Cider Riot right near us at KBU and attacked people there. So I really do feel we need to stop them every single time they come into town. And I do understand saying doing something one day and not other days, but the people that I know personally who go to those, and a lot of other people I've seen, I don't believe that they only do this one day in their life. I think they care about the issues of white supremacy and Nazism and want to stop it.
Well,
and I think it's important to have different methods of protesting, different methods of organizing, but I think we need to have each other's back.
Well, my issue is I don't think they have the larger community's back. I don't feel safe around anti-fascists. As a person of color, I don't feel safe around them. I feel as safe around them.
Well, that makes me sad.
Yeah, I feel as safe around them.
You should be safe.
I don't. I feel as safe around them as I do the Proud Boys, because I don't know who they are.
Have they attacked
you? No, I don't know who they are, and I don't know if they're stable. And I know a lot of them are well-intentioned people. Intention does not equal impact, however. By the way, I don't really feel safe around police either. So we know police.
Well, of course not. We know. I don't,
you know,
feel safe
saying?
Around police either.
So maybe I'm just getting a little scared here, but there's a lot of drama that comes to this town now that we didn't have. I feel uncomfortable shopping,
taking the bus.
What about the
thing that they do go attack other people? Rochelle, what about the fact that they do go attack other people and the police stand off-site and let it happen?
You know how long African Americans have been getting attacked by racist people?
Absolutely. And I think
this has been going on for years.
Every time.
And I don't know that Antifa is going to... Is it Antifa or Antifa?
Oh, I think it's really anti-fascist individuals.
Okay. I don't think they're going to end it.
People who believe in fascism.
And I don't think they're intersectional. I don't think they've asked the people that they're impacting what would be the best way for us to proceed. Now, I know everybody thinks they have a place and a role, and I know that sometimes they're probably doing the right thing. I think a lot of times it's just costing the taxpayers money, and it's not having the impact that they wanted to have. And that's not to say that it's a horrible organization. I just think some tweaks could be made so it could be a more effective way of demonstrating. It looks like we have another call, so I'm going to have to let you go.
Could I ask you to mention the person who was hung? Could you mention that name again?
Tito Gulley, G-U-L-L-E-Y. Uh-huh. And I think if you just Google it, it'll probably pop up.
It's like T-E-T-O?
I believe it's T-I-T-T-O.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Because I had not heard about it until you brought it up. And I do think it's very important.
Okay, thank you for calling in. And it's LJ from Portland next. Hello, LJ. How are you? We got just a few minutes
left. Good morning.
Left.
How are you? And thank you for the conversation.
Well, thank you for calling in. What do you have to say?
I have to say... the connection between the rapid response team of the Portland Police Bureau, Lieutenant Jeff Niger or Nyer or something like that, being in email correspondence, which is Joey Gibson guy, that white supremacist from Vancouver, Washington, why would the Portland Police Bureau sanction communication between a lieutenant of the rapid response team and a white supremacist?
Well, you know, What I understand is from all over the country, from folks that do social justice work, that most of the folks that do social justice work, when they do events, actually do have a relationship with the police department and call the police to let them know they'll be doing actions. My guess is, if you were to ask, that they would say that was it. Well, we were coming out to do a protest, or we were coming out to do a march, so we wanted to let the police know that we were going to be doing this so that we would be safe and other people would be safe. However, I have my doubts about the entire policing system. I don't want to call out anybody individually, because I think the whole system is broken. Let me correct myself. I don't know that it's broken. I actually think maybe this is the way it's designed to work. It's always been a racist system, and it continues to be racist.
The whole system of the Portland Police Bureau is obviously racist, because they are there to protect the interests of the rich white guy. That's their job. Remember, and need I remind you that the first job that law enforcement did was catch runaway slaves.
Yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So we know that history is, you know, a difficult one. So I appreciate you calling in today. It looks like
thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. One more call. And Steve, it looks like you're going to get the last word in today. What do you want to say?
So I appreciate the conversation today, but I would just like to point out a couple things with regard to the debate about whether or not getting in the streets works or doesn't work. Let me remind you of the Egyptians when they were going through their turmoil and they ended up getting taken over just recently, probably 2012. They were millions in the streets. Just the other day, Japan was their leadership was trying to get nuts and pass laws to allow Japanese to get taken over to China. Okay, they put millions of people in the streets. I'm a 58-year-old white guy. I'm not in denial of my privilege as a white guy. I am completely against the lies and the rumors. This country was founded on murder and slavery, and it still exists. You want to get action? Don't go out there and protest like a freaking weekend event so you think you're happy about yourself out there holding a sign. We all need to get out there and mobilize in the millions, like they did in Japan. Not violent, in the millions.
I appreciate you saying that.
That's what's going to work.
Because I'm not against demonstrating. I want to make that clear.
The other thing we need to do is we need to tax the commercials that these corporations are wasting money, lots of money on, by hiding their wealth, by purchasing commercials and writing it off as a tax deduction. You take commercials off the airwaves that are free, then they don't have the power to put their money into these lobbyist bullcrap. So get out in the streets by the millions. You will overpower the oppressors. They will start listening. I'm a U.S. Army retired combat medic with the Special Operations Forces. You need to get bodies in the streets and not just
on a weekly
demonstration. You need to get millions.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. So I want to end the show by saying that I want to be clear. I'm not against demonstrating. I think we all need to do our part. And for some of us, that is the demonstration. What I'm against is going out in the street for the clash with the Proud Boys specifically. Can we ever get out there and just maybe support some people of color that are going to their meeting at the ICE building without having to protest and do the performative action? There's lots of things that we can take part in that will help dismantle the system that we have of oppression. Thank you all for joining me today. Stay tuned at 9 o'clock for Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know, coming up in just a few minutes. Have a great day. Thank you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's 8:58. This is KBOO Portland. Press Watch is next with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. And then at 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11 on Between the Covers, author Miriam Toe is interviewed about her latest read, Women Talking, a novel that asks, how do women who've lived their entire lives in a society that severely limits their agency act when suddenly needing to exercise it. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures with our guest host, Ken Jones. He sits down with graphic novelist Michael Kupperman. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.FM or use our mobile app and click on Donate. It's 8:59 with Press Watch up next.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
It's 9 o'clock Pacific time, and you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the veil of the monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. And the frogs that you're going to hear out of my throat anyway this morning. Let's see, I've got a button marked cough. I'm going to test it. There, I hope that worked. Except for a schmeck.